You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Welcome to From the Black Hole, episode 92. On our third podcast of the week, we welcome James Covey and Andre Bork of the Halifax Wanderers Supporters Group. From the Black Hole, episode 92, third podcast this week. Wow, I'm surprised my wife lets me do all these, to be perfectly honest. When I told her I was doing the third one, she kind of gave me a sideways look. But here I am, down in the basement, recording the next podcast. And, like a few days ago, we have a couple members of another fledgling supporters group for Canadian Premier League team that's hopefully coming in Halifax. This will now be the third of the fledgling supporters groups for teams that don't exist in the league that doesn't yet exist, which I never get tired of kind of chuckling at that. But hey, we're obviously passionate fans because we're doing this. So there you go. James Covey is on the line here, and Andre Bork, two gentlemen who are working on establishing, and it's being temporarily called, Halifax Wanderers Supporters Group. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So, Andre, that was you. So I'm going to start with you. You just volunteered yourself to be first.
Oh, lucky me.
So I just want to spin a little thing here and see if this kind of makes sense to you guys. The podcast, I've told this story a million times in the podcast, but I'm going to have to tell it again just so you guys understand where I'm coming from with this. The podcast name is From the Black Hole. Part of the reason it's called From the Black Hole is from people that we know from the larger cities in Canada, like Vancouver, Toronto, Montreal, who referred to the prairies as the black hole of soccer. So and we have traveled to a lot of Canada games. Some of us have, as a group, sometimes we just go by ourselves and we meet these other folks and become friends with them because they're all soccer supporters too, right? And however, in a way, you could almost say that the Maritimes, and this isn't supposed to be, you know, insulting or pejorative or anything, is the other black hole of soccer in Canada because you seem to have these, you know, soccer, I'm not sure how to put it, hotbeds to some extent, Vancouver and Toronto, Montreal, and maybe you could say Calgary, Edmonton somewhat, and Ottawa for sure would fall in there. But cities like ours, Regina, where I am, and Saskatoon, where Jeff is — Jeff couldn't be here today — and Halifax, not necessarily seen as soccer hotbeds. So what I'm curious about is how you even come to be a supporter in Halifax without a team to support. I mean, you guys are obviously keen on this because, like much of the rest of us, you started this without even having a team to support. So something must have grabbed your interest. How do you come to this, to the idea that you want to be in a supporters group, being a supporter?
Well, for me, for everything I've done related to soccer, I've always looked externally for my fandom, I guess, right?
Right.
Because I never even imagined that this region would have a soccer team. I wasn't following the developments of the CPL at all until it showed up in my Twitter feed saying that, hey, there's a bunch of guys wanting to put this league together. And all of a sudden, there's this guy who wants to put a supporters group together in Halifax.
Right.
So once I started digging more into it, I realized, hey, this could actually be a thing. So for me, having a team here to actually support has only been in existence for me like in 2 months, right?
It's
still very, very new. Because I think in this region, you'll have a lot of soccer fans, but I'm sure a lot of them are like me, where they look externally. Like for me, I'll support the Canadian national team for sure.
Right.
Patriotic Canadian. But once they lose to Honduras in some qualifying round.
Yeah, not
how
yet.
Many minutes in are we?
Yeah. Ouch. Ouch.
That I know, I'm already firing shots. I apologize to all the listeners.
That's always the dagger. Like, when you did that, you just triggered at least, 15 people that are listening to this. Out of the 16 that are listening to this, you just triggered them all. Their faces started to twitch.
I apologize.
Look for our new podcast called From the Even Darker Place.
Yeah, that's right.
But once they're out, which... I pray that one day they will be able to qualify. I'll switch my support to France for me personally, right?
Oh, okay, right.
They tend to qualify a little more often, and
they do.
Yeah. Even though sometimes it's close, sometimes it takes a handball for them to get in. But
yes, everybody remembers that incident, I'm sure.
Yeah. that's for me. It's the excitement of actually having the opportunity to support a team. Right. Because we do have a very successful hockey team, a CHL team, the Mooseheads, which I think are one of the better run hockey CHL teams in the country. Actually, they're constantly producing young talent. But that's pretty much the only big sporting event there is here in the city. There's a little basketball team, which, I mean, they win stuff, but nobody really goes to watch them.
Mm-hmm.
For me, having an actual soccer team here would be huge. And I think that's where a lot of people in the supporters group came in. Same reason as me, and James can say yay or nay to that. But it's a weird concept for me, having my own team in my own hometown.
So just to pick up on something you said there, you said you're looking a way to support things in soccer. What gets you interested in soccer at all? And what are you interested in outside of, I'm assuming you're saying outside of North America. So what are you interested in outside of North America, and why are you interested in it at all?
For me, I started watching it. It was the 2002 World Cup, and I just started watching it, and I was captivated by the game. I'm always a big fan of international competition, and seeing the World Cup was huge, obviously. And since in 2002, when I first started watching it, soccer in North America, there was the MLS, but there were no Canadian teams or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the biggest thing, the first thing that I could watch was the Premier League. And then from then on, I started following, and there's more leagues, there's more options. And so I just expanded that way, right? So for now, my favorite team is Athletic Bilbao and La Liga. I just kind of stuck to those guys. No real big reason why, it's just... When I finally seen La Liga on TV, I was like, this is something I could get into.
Right.
So it's kind of my story. It's not very exciting, but
no. But you know, I think a lot of North Americans can kind of relate, because especially Canadians, because often, you know, like, I grew up without a team to support. There was nothing to support in Canada. There wasn't a lot on TV. You know, back in the 90s, Soccer Saturday was on, and then you could kind of get behind some stuff, maybe.
Yeah.
Lots of people look away first, latch onto something there, and then realize that, it's also here, too, and gravitate towards it. I think it's a very standard, typical story, and not disinteresting at all, because it's so relatable, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
So yeah.
James, what about yourself?
I took a long time to get from, like, international tournaments to the club game. I mean, so I guess I'm the old guy here, but I
don't know. We might be close enough in age.
All right.
Yeah, you guys are the old guys. Let's put this.
Yeah.
Hey, clarified. Wait a second.
Yeah. So I was 12 years old in 82 when the first time that the whole World Cup was on TV in Canada, right?
That was
you know, CBC showed it. That was Spain, and so here I am, an impressionable 12-year-old, and. So, I was an adopted kid, and the only biographical information I had about my birth father at that stage in my life was I knew he was from Italy.
Oh, is that
so? So imagine this impressionable 12-year-old kid getting into soccer for the first time, watching every game of the World Cup, and then Italy have that sort of miracle game where they come back to beat Brazil, 3-2 in the quarters, where, you know, Brazil was supposed to smash everyone that year.
Right.
And, you know, rolled on to beat, you know, West Germany in the final. That was amazing. Like, it was just, it was just an unexpected emotional experience for me as a 12-year-old. And then the very next World Cup, of course, was the one and only that Canada got in,
mm-hmm.
in Mexico 86.
Right.
So, you know, I basically followed, you know, World Cups and some of the international stuff going on in between, but I never really got into the club game so much. But I just always knew, you know, I loved the game when I watched it. So then, the 1 year that we had a professional team here was 91.
Right. Yes.
So, yeah. Nova Scotia Clippers in the CSL. Clippers. Yeah, so I got out to a couple of those games, but they were, you know, over on the Dartmouth side. I grew up in Spry Fields, which is sort of opposite side, mainland. So, you know, like I say, I got out to one or two of those games, but you know, I wasn't there on a regular basis.
Yeah, well, the team wasn't there for very long either, right? Like a lot of the old Canadian Soccer League teams, you know, they popped in and popped out and popped in and popped out, and it was a league that served a great purpose, but was also very chaotic from season to season.
Absolutely. And yeah, like for Halifax, for Nova Scotia Clippers, it was 1 year, yeah. One season, not 91. So here and gone, you know. And, you know, I really didn't get as much into the club game until a lot later. I would say 2010. When the score started showing Serie A in Canada, that was the year I fell in love with Claudio Ranieri's Roma.
Right.
And I've been following Roma ever since. A few years later, my honeymoon, I got to Rome and went and saw Roma Napoli. 2013. Nice. So that was Cavani's last game with Napoli. So it was the ultimate, like, have your cake and eat it too.
Right.
Because I got to see Roma win 2-1, but the one was a beautiful goal by Cavani. So it was sort of how you'd script that experience if you're a fan, you know you're only going to see one game. Right?
Right.
Yeah, so that was pretty awesome.
I know a Lazio fan that would just be like insulting you.
Right? I have some Lazio sort of, you know, fans in my life too, believe it or not.
There
yeah. So that can be complicated. This is a little bit of a tangent, but just to illuminate
bit. No, we don't go on tangents on our podcast.
Tangents are us, right? Yeah. Okay. yeah, that never happened to you.
Yeah, never.
The thing about '82, that the capper of that huge game against Brazil was an amazing save by Dino Zoff, right? And so I've just that goaltender was an idol to me. So flash forward to however many years. So 99 was when I met my birth father. I've had a great relationship with him ever since. So I've been, you know, getting into, you know, Italian culture, learning a bit of the language and stuff like that. So after one of the Euro games last Euro, sitting around with one of his cousins, and he starts asking me how long I've been into it, and then his sort of eyebrows go up when he finds out I've been kind of following kind of Italy since 82. And he goes, you know, I once scored a goal on Dino Zoff. So they were in the army together, right?
Oh.
So yeah. So that was like quite the, you know, holy shit moment.
Yeah, talk about a connection, eh?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And then kind of, you know, started to follow MLS because that's our sort of big league here.
Right.
Yep, but the weird thing for me, like, I have lots of friends and indeed a couple of sisters in Toronto, but for whatever reason I really glommed on to Montreal. Maybe it's all the Italian connections there.
They certainly have some Italian connections.
Yeah. One or two.
Yeah.
So I got up there just a couple of years back, well, 2014, I guess, for a game at Saputo. And I really liked the experience of being, you know, as close as you are to the pitch. Mm-hmm. There's, when I went to the game in Rome, you know, it's Olympic Stadium. You're kind of a ways away.
Yeah. The whole idea of, I mean, I know they have to do it, but running tracks, right?
God, I hate
running tracks around the pitch. Yeah. It just separates you so much.
Yeah, me too. I can't wait till they get their new stadium. It'll be a good excuse to go back.
Right.
but yeah, you can't, you know, this is such a cliche, but you really, you don't know how fast that the game happens until you're there, you know, as close as that to the field. Right. But that's what I really took away from that first time seeing the impact. Mm-hmm. And then I went back up the next year to for the game at Olympic Stadium when they were in the CCL final against America.
Oh, that was an incredible game.
That was insane. Yeah. The crowd was insane.
Yeah, yeah.
61,000 people. So
you know what? I found that game and the previous Montreal game when they were still in NASL and they played Santos Laguna, and then the TFC Impact back-to-back playoff games this last fall. Where yep. some of these games that just make the hair stand up on the back of your neck, partially just because of the crowd noise. Of course, I'm watching it on TV, but somebody scores and the place just explodes.
Those crowds were world class.
Yeah, like, yeah, unbelievable.
Say what you want about the game, but the crowds were world class.
Yeah,
for sure.
So you've had some getting around to see some games, which is good. Have either of you seen any of the national team stuff play? Have you ever traveled to any of those games? Curious.
Never.
Yeah,
I haven't.
Well, sadly, I cordially invite you, because I mean that's like many of the Saskies we and you know other people that we know and stuff like that. That's how we all met. And how we got into a more deep relationship with soccer rather than just kind of, you know, watching it on TV, which not that there's anything wrong with that, but you sure get a different sense of things when you're in the stadium and you're watching those things. And I think, if I remember correctly, when the Regina guys got together, like we're hoping to have a team here, of course. Mm-hmm. And, I think between the eight of us there, we had 89, national team, or maybe it was 84. It was in the 80s somewhere. National team games between us, right? A couple were only had seen two or three, but one guy, Matt Gorley, who's from Regina but lives in Moose Jaw, which is about 45 minutes away, has been to 29 games.
Wow.
29 national team games, men's, women's, and some of the junior levels. So he's really gotten around, of course.
Out of curiosity, how close do they usually come to Regina? Do they ever play – does the national team ever play games in Regina?
No. And there's a whole thing about that with our new CFL stadium and the the turf they put in. And this is about 6 to 8 months ago maybe where they put the turf in. And on the old CFL stadium, they actually sewed the CFL lines right into the turf. So the turf is green where it's green and it's white where it's white. It's not painted. Now they can paint it. But it's permanent in there, and they decided to do that with the new field. And at the time, there were some people in Regina who were in conversations with the Canadian Soccer Association about getting an event in Regina once the stadium opens, you know, like as maybe a test event kind of thing.
Yeah.
'Cause the football team has not, the CFL football team hasn't played in it yet. They're mm-hmm. starting in June, right? Or in May or whatever. If they're doing some preseason work in there or whatever. Yep. So, you know, there's going to be another test event, I think, coming in April. There was one in September where our local university, the U of R Rams football team, played a half-capacity test event in the stadium last September or October. So, but when they were talking about this, I was just, you know, like, oh, my God, we're going to get a national team game. Ah, right? I was kind of freaking out. And then we heard the stuff about the turf. And then, but we weren't sure. And then we confirmed it with some of the guys that are working, and they had, you know, what they thought were decent reasons. And from their perspective, I kind of agree with them. They were concerned with the expense, right, of unpainting and repainting and all that stuff, and maintaining the lines all the time, and then not getting any payback for that with actually having any soccer events here. But it was a disappointment to me. So no, the closest I've traveled for a game was Winnipeg, which is a 6-hour drive. And the women were playing the U.S. in a friendly, and I think it might have been Kadisha Buchanan's first goal for Canada as a 17-year-old. And I think it ended up being a 1-1 tie. 28,000 in Winnipeg saw that game. Wow. And it was in their new stadium, their new CFL stadium. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic. The atmosphere was the atmosphere was actually very quiet for the first half and got much, much better in the second half. But the fan support was great. 28,000. The stadium looked fantastic. Like, it looked like a perfectly natural soccer stadium. It was really well set up. And then, of course, cool. Edmonton's drivable, right, in a day. And I've been to Edmonton for two of the games of Women's World Cup that were there, the game against China and the game against New Zealand. And then the year before that, I was there for the under-20 women's quarterfinal against Germany. And so those are the only really close ones. Everywhere else we fly. So well, actually, I shouldn't say that. I've flown to Vancouver a couple times, flown to Toronto several times to see games. And then myself and a buddy drove from Regina to Seattle to Denver and then back to Regina to catch Gold Cup games in Seattle and Denver. The total distance was 5,500 kilometers. But, you know, I mean, this is something that prairie folks do. We drive places. Like, you know, most of our family and my in-laws and stuff are 300 kilometers away, and we won't think anything about jumping in the vehicles and going driving there for the weekend. We do it all the time kind of thing. So,
yeah,
things are not close together. So, anyway, this isn't supposed to be a podcast about what's going on with me.
Sorry.
Well, no, that's okay. Speaking of tangents.
But, you know, it ties back to what you were saying earlier about how, you know, there are some things that are similar out here, right?
Yeah, so, I totally agree.
So our closest major city is Boston.
Right.
That's a 10-hour drive.
Right.
Right? Montreal's 12 hours, Toronto's 17.
Wait a minute. You don't consider the greater Moncton area to be a long city?
Yeah.
Sir, I've just lit a fire there, my friend.
Yeah. No, I see. I've been to Moncton a couple times, and I always got a kick out of the fact that they call it, I think it is the greater Moncton area, isn't it?
Yeah.
When they amalgamated a bunch of different whatever districts, and so you've got Moncton proper, and then you've got the greater Moncton area. I was like, oh, that's brilliant.
It's like
the Regina metropolitan area, or the metropolis of Regina. It includes, you know, Lumsden and Balgoni or whatever. Anyway, tiny little towns outside.
To be fair, Halifax did the same thing as well. Halifax, Halifax Regional Municipality, right? So they just grabbed all the, and they actually go really far. Like if you follow the eastern shore up from Halifax,
okay,
you can drive like up to Sheet Harbour or even farther, which is like over an hour, and it's still technically Halifax.
Yeah. So like, but Peggy's Cove isn't part of that.
Peggy's Cove.
Oh, it does go that far, hey?
Yeah, but Peggy's Cove is south of Halifax.
Yeah, right. It's the other, yeah. Oh, I see. You're talking about going towards like,
Cape Breton.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. When you said, did you say east or did you say north? It's kind of northeast, isn't it?
Northeast,
or do I have my geography wrong? Okay. Yeah. No, I was just confused with the directions.
Our conventions for talking about this stuff are super confusing because you drive up, you know, one coastal path and you're driving the eastern shore. If you go in the opposite direction, you're going to the south shore.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
makes perfect sense.
For me, I grew up 3 hours south of Halifax, and it's so far south it's not even considered the South Shore anymore.
Right.
They don't even call it the South Shore.
Okay. Right? So what is it then?
It'd be Yarmouth and the Acadian Shores.
Ah, I see. Yeah. Okay.
I'm from West Pamlico, is where it's called. So if you pick up a French accent, that's why.
I got you.
French is my first language.
There you go. Okay, so now let's talk a little bit about the whole potential advent of this, of the supporters group. Where did the idea to form the supporters group come from, and what's kind of happened on that front so far? Who wants – either of you could take this one.
I'll take it, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. Why don't you?
It was a gentleman by the name of Garrett McPhee.
Okay.
Who lives out west, I think Edmonton.
He's Edmonton because he's a FC Edmonton supporter, I'm almost positive. Yep.
But I think by the sounds of it, he's a native of Halifax.
Yo, okay, hold on a second. Is he the guy that plays the bagpipes there?
I don't think so.
I'm going to have to find that out, because, I mean, I know quite a few of the FC Edmonton supporters, but I don't...
He made a comment about looking for a bagpiper for our home games, I don't think so.
Right. He formed it.
Yes. He said he was sitting at home with his girlfriend and they were discussing it. And he said, wouldn't it be cool if Halifax had a team? So he just started this Twitter group on a whim. And lo and behold, SCA comes out saying they're going to have a team.
Right.
And so he kind of just promoted it that way. So for me, like I said, after I found out about this, I sent him a message and a bunch of other people must have done the same. So Garrett's the brainchild of the Wanderers.
Right.
So we had a few meetings and we came. He coined the name. He said it was based on the fact that Maritimers tend to wander across the country, right? You can find Maritimers in every corner of this country, usually looking for work.
Yeah, absolutely you can. I know. And, on the prairies, everybody knows a Maritimer or two.
Yeah, exactly.
If you live in Fort McMurray, you're the only one who hasn't come from the East Coast. Right? It's like Newfoundland. It's like Newfoundland too in Fort McMurray, Alberta.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I hear. I've never been, but that's exactly what I hear.
Sorry to cut you off, but I believe at one place, at one time, and this was quite a long time ago because it's not true anymore. But at one time, it was the only place outside of Newfoundland that there was a Mary Brown's Chicken franchise.
That's hilarious.
Fort McMurray, Alberta. Yeah.
Nice.
Crazy, eh?
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, keep going with the Wanderers story here.
No worries. He liked that name, and it also fit with how a lot of English clubs have that name of the blank Wanderers, right? Yeah,
sure.
And so it just fit. And then he was very surprised to find out that SEA was looking for the land they had sought out was actually called Wanderers Ground in Halifax. So it fit even better.
So the name actually predated the fact that they said they were going to look at that from the stadium site?
Yeah. So I can talk about that a little bit if you like, Andre.
That's fascinating.
I've sort of volunteered within the group to start doing some history on how the name is being used here. So, you know, I've been hitting the library and the Sports Hall of Fame here and digging in. But, you know, I have much more to read. So, you know, look for blog posts or something. I don't know when I get my head around it all.
There you go.
But basically, so the Halifax Wanderers were an amateur athletic association here from like the 1880s up until the mid 1950s. And so the Wanderers Ground name comes from that amateur athletic association. They were movers and shakers in rugby and track and field. They were into a lot of other sports as well, but the kind of biggest successes, I think, were rugby and track and field. So that, you know, the whole amateur athletic thing as like the major way to do sports kind of petered out in the 1950s, right? And the steam came out of the club and they folded and kind of by 1950, you know, mid 50s, 1958, you know, it sort of ran out of money and they sold the grounds to the city for $5,000 and the city wrote off their taxes. So ever since 1958, I believe it's been a municipal property. So it's got a long history of sports happening there.
Right.
Yeah, and that name is a callback to that to that athletic club, basically.
Yeah, I just find it's also interesting that Garrett, like you were saying, picked the name Wanderers, and then Sports Entertainment Atlantic mentioned that Wanderers Ground was going to be a stadium, and it wasn't the other way around.
No, exactly.
Right? It just seemed like such a natural thing.
That's what Garrett said. So, Garrett, if I butchered your story, I apologize.
That's okay. Just run with it, because it'll seem like the stars have aligned, right?
Yeah, true. That's true.
Listen, it feels like the stars have aligned regardless.
Yeah, I bet seriously. I bet you it does feel like that, because I think I picked up, James, a few of the things that you said on the Facebook group that you guys had about, you know, the 20-year whatever. I'm not even sure what to struggle isn't quite the right word, because it doesn't seem like it's possibly ever going to happen. But the idea to build a CFL side stadium and have the 10th CFL team be in Halifax. And let me tell you, as a longtime CFL fan, like I went to my first Rider game in 1977, And I've got, my grandma had tickets from the 50s till the 90s, like season tickets, right? And so we've been going for years. It was always on people's tongues occasionally that, oh, yeah, well, I bet you Halifax will be the 10th team, right? That was always part of the narrative, and it's never happened. Yes. So.
And yeah, never well,
here either.
That's the thing. It's, it'll be, so it's 34 years this week. Since the Atlantic Schooners franchise that had been awarded by the CFL announced their stadium plan.
Right.
And yeah, so that would have been, February of 83, if I got that right. Yeah. So
have they broken ground yet?
Yeah, that's the thing. But they were saying that they had federal funds committed. There were never federal funds committed. And by May of that year, the CFL had figured that out and revoked the franchise. So it's this, and there are still some true believers, which is awesome. It's like a point of pride. It's the only CFL franchise, that was officially awarded that never played a game. So they like to talk about being still undefeated.
Right.
And every year at the Grey Cup, as I understand it, there's a Atlantic Schooners party, just like there is for all the teams that actually exist. I went to the Atlantic Schooners party, Winnipeg 2006.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and you know what was awesome was the Rough Riders band showed up and provided music.
Yeah, of course.
And it was a hopping party. Tom Wright, who was commissioner of the league at the time, showed up, and I asked him, is it realistic to think about, a CFL team in Halifax? And he said, getting out the number of people we need, we don't think it's a problem. But you need a stadium. At the time, there was this idea afloat of, there had been like a Commonwealth Games bid attempt that was forming. That turned into a major debacle, one of the many debacles on this 34-year road.
Wow.
there's a nice history of that on the Coast website that kind of where Tim Busquette is a really well-known local journalist kind of took apart everything that went wrong with that goal.
Right.
So that, that's been one of the stops on the way. In recent years, the city has spent $4 million on a series of studies to, look at having a CFL stadium, and it just doesn't seem we're any closer.
Right.
So that's the, that's the background against which we're operating with. It's like, it seems, every few months or years, someone starts talking about a stadium plan and never materializes.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was a big part of why, why I got excited, why others got excited about this idea of like, let's look at what we've already got here.
Right. Now, let me see if I'm characterizing this correctly, because, I try and pay attention to what's being said online, and then some of the stuff that's come out from your guys' Facebook posts has been interesting, and also the articles that have come out in some of the Halifax news publications. Yeah. Sports Entertainment Atlantic guys seem pretty darn savvy, and it seems like they're already making decisions which make a lot of sense, especially in the Halifax context. Like you've talked about the 34-year non-journey to get a CFL stadium.
Yeah.
They're going to try and put their own temporary stadium together with no public money that people will get behind, because they're, people everywhere are, not necessarily that keen on the government throwing money at big infrastructure projects. There was a reasonable amount of controversy when the Ryder Stadium got built, but as a season ticket holder, I'm going to be paying for a big chunk of that too. So, it's a little bit hard, what are you going to do? But Is that a fair characterization from your guys' point, that these guys seem like they have things together?
From the outside, it definitely looks that way. This is just speculation on my part, but this ownership group is going to be in talks with the rest of the CFL. So it wouldn't surprise me if the end goal for these guys is to actually have that legendary or that elusive CFL team eventually come into Halifax, right?
Right. So this might be again, also a ways to a different end as well, is what you're saying.
Yeah, kind of get in on this club and then move on to an actual permanent stadium eventually, maybe, that's both a soccer team and a CFL team. I don't know, just speculation on my part, but it seems it would make
sense. Yeah, that's interesting. You know, the other thing that, that has seemed to have come up from what they've said is they've said some things right off the bat, which makes it seem like either they get the idea of supporters culture or they've done their homework enough to know what to say about supporters culture. And that's kind of encouraging too.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure, the fact that they acknowledged our existence in the first place is pretty cool. I mean,
right.
Through Twitter interactions, that's always encouraging.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So now, I mean, I'm very lucky. I've been to Halifax a couple of times. I was in Halifax for my honeymoon, actually.
Nice.
Yeah, many years ago. Yeah. we traveled around quite a bit in Atlantic Canada. And but for somebody who hasn't been to Halifax, can you guys kind of describe, and this is something that excites me, and it sounds like it excites some of you guys in the group that are exchanging messages on Facebook and stuff like that, which I've been kind of watching from afar to some extent. But can you talk a little bit about the, you know, kind of the urban geography of Halifax and how, speaking of stars aligning, some things might be aligning in terms of the stadium location and the rest of the downtown and those kinds of things for people that don't understand what the Halifax looks like. Explain to them how this is going to plug into the fact that a soccer team, where it's going to be located, could be really well supported.
Go ahead, James.
I really enjoyed a couple episodes back, your count of all the pubs within walking distance.
I was trying to think of how many I could remember being in, and I could probably 15, 16, maybe, like something like that. But I've been.
That's a good time.
Yeah, not bad. I was in Halifax last January, actually, for a work course, and I was there for 10 days, and every day was a different pub for supper kind of thing. So,
yeah. So, you know, the way Halifax is laid out, like the traditional sort of city of Halifax is sitting on a peninsula with a huge harbor, right? And, you know, across the harbor is Dartmouth. It's linked by two ferries and two bridges.
Right.
And that all come over to downtown Halifax. And then on the other side of the peninsula, there's all kinds of mainland neighborhoods and communities. I grew up in one of those called Spryfield. On the whole peninsula is basically walkable, you know.
Right.
You know, it's kind of the walkable part of Halifax. You know, the whole rest of the sprawl is very much, you know, you really want a car to get around effectively.
But
the downtown is, beautifully walkable. And so the Wanderers Grounds is nestled up against kind of the central kind of feature of the city, which is Citadel Hill, which, you know, which is where the old fortress is, and it looks out across the harbor. And it's kind of right in the center. It's between downtown, where a lot of those pubs are, the south end, where there's a couple of universities, you know, the west end, where there's a lot of homes and residences. So, you know, the location from that point of view could not be more ideal. I mean, some folks who live kind of further out find it a bit of a pain to kind of drive all the way in or find other ways to come in. But looking at the density, the layout and all that stuff, it's really, from my point of view, it's a dream scenario if you want to make a day of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's what a lot of people would love to do if this came to fruition.
Yeah. And this also comes from having some experience in other places, right? Like we had for the Canada-Mexico game in Vancouver, we had the most amazing march that I have ever been in. It was like last March, almost a year ago now. I had my daughters with me as well, and they were 11 and 8 at the time. So it was this crazy, intense, huge march that took up about two blocks of Robson Street. I'm talking sidewalk to sidewalk. The cars just stopped, but it was also very safe. And the red and white smoke and the banners and the flags were all going, and we just went marching downhill, singing, and it was crazy. But I could picture that kind of atmosphere where everybody starts, you know, piling out of the bars and pubs in downtown Halifax and starts marching up the hill, right? Picking a central street, going past the Citadel towards the grounds. And I'm just like, wow, like that has so many natural things that lend itself to the idea of having a great supporter culture.
Listen, I was in the one soccer related procession I've ever seen on the Halifax Peninsula.
Was that right?
And that was 2006 when Italy won the World Cup.
Right, right.
Because, you know, by that time, you know, I met my birth father, knew his family quite well. And so there was basically a victory parade that started from the Italian Cultural Center in the north end of Halifax and proceeded along Agricola all the way towards Citadel Hill.
Right, right.
My Zio Elio was, you know, waving his Italian flag out the window of his van, which was totally draped in Italian colors. And I'm like waving to people cheering. It was insane.
Right, right.
I've never seen anything like that in Halifax before or since.
Yeah, super fun.
yeah. But the pregame excitement of like walking up to a game is amazing. You know, I got in on that in Montreal when I was telling you about being up there for the CCL final.
Yeah, absolutely.
There, like, the singing was starting, like, on the metro, right? So you're in a car full of Impact fans and everyone's singing LA, Montreal, and all the way into, like, through Olympic Stadium and in, right?
Nice.
It's an amazing experience.
Yeah, so lots to be excited about in Halifax. I got a couple more questions. First of all, can you guys talk a little bit about the potential fodder that you have that maybe the rest of us in the country don't quite have so much of for deadly chants?
I posted in Facebook there once. I probably went on way too long with it, but the whole sea tradition of the sea shanty lends itself really well as a crowd chant, right? Because it's all a chorus and you the crowd repeats what the first guy is yelling, right? So like the great Stan Rogers had Barrett's Privateers.
Right.
Which I think everybody links with the Maritimes and specifically Halifax, right? How awesome would it be for the entire crowd to be singing Barrett's Privateers when those players are coming up onto the field? I mean, it'd be unreal.
Absolutely.
And then you could also plug in your own, right? You can find the tune of one that you like and just change the words up and make it your own. I mean, that's something that we should definitely capitalize on. And it'll make the stadium experience our own, right? I mean, Halifax is a unique city as it is. And just adding that extra little layer would make it awesome, I think.
Yeah, I mean, sure. We've had such great kind of, you know, regional songwriters here from Ann Murray to Joel Plaskett and everywhere in between. And so there's so many songs that originate from here that people actually know. I just feel like it'll be really easy to get the fans sharing in the singing and chanting experience. I can't wait to see what people do with some of these songs and, you know, adapting them.
Yeah, when you have like a shared music in your culture and you also have the shared knowledge of the words,
yeah,
you've got a leg up on everybody else. because a lot of chants take on the, you know, recognizable tunes, so that's good, and that, you know, is a way to ease people into it. But then when the lyrics sometimes are difficult, then it can kind of break down. But when you have songs that everybody and their grandma knows,
yeah,
you're so far ahead of the game, and songs that have stood the test of time,
yep,
too, right? Like that's a big part of it as well. Some of these songs are hundreds of years old, like traditional songs,
yeah,
and whatnot. Like that's very good. James, I think it's you that's going to be at your meet and greet on Tuesday. Could you talk a little bit about that?
I'm just looking forward to, you know, meeting a bunch of folks in person. You know, having these kinds of conversations about, you know, how did you get into the game? What's exciting you about this, you know, possibility? And, you know, just getting to know people and starting to kind of lay the groundwork for having a thriving supporters group and supporters culture here. So, you know, I just think it's at the moment, you know, we're not to the point yet of being sort of formally organized or anything like that. you know, we'll get there, I think, especially if, you know, we continue to get more indications that this is actually coming down the pipe. But I think at the moment, it's just important to kind of show that, you know, we're open and that you'll hopefully have like a really like diverse and, you know, welcoming group that can build and not just be, you know, five dudes that happen to know each other or whatever. I mean, what's, you know what I mean? Like it's, I think it's really fun how like suddenly I'm meeting all these people I never knew and we're coming together about around this, you know, shared love of the game. I just want to like extend that to the nth degree, to the extent that we can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I don't know if you heard it, but when the KW guys, Grand River Union guys, were on Levi and Adrian a couple of days ago, that was something they referenced as well. And they were like, yeah, this is, you know, to a large extent, this is about community and their, you know, district of Kitchener-Waterloo and the surrounding neighborhoods. They've spent time investing in the soccer community in other ways, and this is just another way to build another layer of community on top of that. And that seems to be a theme, right? James with the Barton Street Battalion guys too, you know, they're getting out to community events. That's one of the ways of, you know, publicizing themselves, but it's also an investment that they're making. I think the supporters group and community link is kind of ubiquitous amongst everybody, you know, bringing people together in a way you go. So it's exciting times in a way, isn't it?
It sure is.
Yeah. So, okay. So I can't remember what my last question was. I've kind of lost it. So, I remember what it was. So one more thing about the Sports Entertainment Atlantic guys. Do you have any plans? Like, you have this meet and greet going on Tuesday, or pub night, or whatever you want to call it, on Tuesday. Is there any plans to try and, you know, twist some arms and get some of them out and start, you know, laying the groundwork with some dialogue with those guys?
Oh, I think we should sort of, you know, make sure the welcome mat is out for those guys. Like, I don't think we have to have, you know, a big organized structure before we start talking and with them and getting to know them. So, I expect we'll at least, you know, reach out there over the weekend and see if,
I think the cooperation between both groups can only benefit the greater good, right? I mean, yeah. Both groups can talk and work together. I mean, we're both in the same team, so.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's another reason why I'm jealous of you and jealous of the KW guys is they actually have contact with the people that might have the teams. I've been dying to find the same thing in Regina, right? And it's Regina's a small city and everybody knows each other, you know, or you're only one or two links removed from pretty much everybody in the city. But it's just been everything's been very tightly held under the cone of silence. I've heard more about a potential Regina team from people in Southern Ontario than I have from people in Regina. So that's a bit tough for now, but I'm hoping that all my pseudo patience will pay off eventually. Maybe we'll see.
Yeah.
We're getting up to about 50 minutes. And you guys have been very gracious guests and it's been pretty exciting talking to you. Good luck with everything that you guys are doing going forward. I'm going to be really interested in paying attention. And I sure hope that I have the time and maybe the cash to do, you know, some kind of crazy Canadian Premier League away game tour. So I can go to all these, you know, Southern Ontario, and then maybe if Ottawa is involved and Halifax is just go ping, ping, ping. I think those away days would be spectacular.
It would be worth your money.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be awesome. I think it'd be great.
Absolutely.
Well, I would absolutely look forward to you know, raising a pint out here with you.
Yeah, I think I might even tip two.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Well, good luck with everything. Good luck with Tuesday night. I hope you guys get some guys out and in the future. And I can't wait to hear that announcement that we're all getting a team and you guys as well. I'm crossing my fingers.
Thanks a lot, Rob.
And that brings us to the end of episode 92. Thanks for listening, and of course thanks to James and Andre for joining us, and good luck with Halifax Wanderers supporters group. We'll be back soon with another podcast, so until then, take care.